Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcast. Today, you are listening to STC Podcast Episode 18. We hear from Stephen Bates, Technical Director with PMC, as he presents Donard, NVM Express for peer-to-peer between SSDs and other PCIe devices from the 2015 Storage Developer Conference.
I'm Steve Bates. I'm a Senior Technical Director in PMC. We do enterprise storage, and I'll talk a little about that in a second. I'm going to talk today about how we're leveraging some of our NVM Express product portfolio and IP and technology to look at how do we combine things like storage and networking and compute that can all live on the PCIe bus and make them all work very interestingly together without necessarily having to go through the central processing unit, or as a good friend of mine likes to call it, the computational periphery unit, and do some interesting things that might tie into NVM over fabrics. Amber hits me when I say that because it's not standard yet, so if I say NVM over RDMA, it's fear the wrath of Amber. That ties into hyperconverged. So, you know, what happens if I take a box and I put some fast storage, maybe some processing like a GPU or an FPGA card, and then something like an RDMA NIC, and then put some software on top and then tile that out like a million times or a billion times or however many times these huge hyperscale companies are doing it. Looking also at things like next generation all flash arrays, which maybe don't use SATA or SAS. Instead, they use RDMA to get into the box, and then inside we have a PCIe fabric and NVMe drives that are built out of things like NAND and maybe things that aren't NAND, like 3D Crosspoint or resistive RAM or whatever like that. So this work is all CSTO, it's proof of concept, it's exploratory. I see some really friendly faces in here, and we've been working with a lot of interesting, wonderful companies and people, kind of seeing what all this does. I don't have all the answers, so this is really very much a technology discussion, and trying to work out what's interesting, how do we make an ecosystem out of it, what standards might have to be, you know, worked on or impacted in order to go make some of this happen. So feel free to jump in with comments or questions as we go. I'm going to try and move reasonably fast and then have some time for discussions afterwards and stuff like that. Okay.
Got to do this.
So PMC, actually we have a dilemma. You know, my boss would probably kill me if he sees this slide, but we're very much an old school, new school kind of company right now. We traditionally have done very well over here, and we've enabled storage companies. HP is a big customer, EMC, NetApp, and also some of the newer storage companies in the public cloud, some of the hyperscalers, to connect up a lot of drives, a lot of hard drives typically, and we manage those drives very well. We provide that connectivity, and I'll be honest, we make a pretty nice sum of money, not a huge sum of money, but a pretty nice sum of money doing that, and we've solved hard problems for people over the course of the evolution of SAS quite nicely. But we've also realized that is, you know, that things are changing, and this business is not going to go away overnight, and I don't think it'll go away anytime soon. But there's a lot of really interesting things that are happening, and we need to take part of that. So we have a new school division as well, which is much more focused on some of these new things that we've been talking about at this conference and other places. NVMe SSD controllers, that's something that we sell. It's public knowledge that companies like HTST and OCZ, which is part of Toshiba, use us in their NVMe offerings for their high-end enterprise / data center type SSDs. And again, we also sell to the hyperscalers who do weird and wonderful things with our controllers that are nothing like NVMe. To be honest, sometimes I don't even know what they're doing with them. PCIe switching is a new business that we've got into. It's very nice because it ties in very nicely with NVMe. NVMe runs over PCIe today. an NVMe over Fabrics is all about providing distance and scale to NVMe Express by letting it run over other protocols like RDMA and FiberTime. We also have, as well as simple fanout switches, we have some what we call our switch tech storage switches, which have some weird and wonderful things in them that they can do, like non-transparent bridging, so multiple hosts can share drives. And anyone who's at IDF last month, we did a demo with Intel that showed how multiple hosts could share a pool of NVMe drives and semi-dynamically repartition those drives between multiple hosts at the same time, which is not something that really anyone else has been able to do until now. But that's a problem we've got to solve, because in the future, you're all going to want to deploy lots of NVMe drives. You're probably going to want to virtualize some layer over the top, and you're going to be able to go, this guy doesn't need all this data, or doesn't need all these drives, and I want to move some of them over here. Right? And these are problems that we're having to solve. This is legacy, but it makes tons of money, and this is new and groovy, and I like this a lot. So what have we been looking at? We've been building some ideas around this very straightforward architecture. So, you know, this is going to be familiar to everybody. We have a host CPU. I don't really care what architecture it is, but if you're in the world of enterprise and data center, I think it's public knowledge that Intel have 108% market share. With a joke. We obviously connect DRAM. There's not that many systems that will work that well without DRAM, though. In fact, your workload is totally sequential. You don't actually need DRAM because you can just page it because you know in advance the data you want. But that's a really weird problem that you're trying to solve if you know the data. Then we have some kind of in-server fabric that's pretty much exclusively PCIe today, right? And that makes a lot of sense. Intel, as one example, give us about a billion PCIe lanes for free out of each processor, right into the nearest billion. And they will continue to do that. And we connect wonderful devices up on these PCIe channels that come directly out of the processor. So I can put my NVMe SSD, I can put some compute, whether that's a GPGPU or an FPGA card or some, like a Knight's Landing, the Xeon 5 from Intel. You know, we don't really care as long as we have some way of making it do interesting data manipulation for us. Who cares? And then we obviously want to probably pull data in from the outside world, otherwise we're just working in a vacuum. And so, we have networking devices which may or may not support RDMA and may not be based on Ethernet. So that's kind of the model that we're working in. Excuse me. The work that we've been doing is building on top of the standard NVMe Express. Linux has been great in the sense that it's supported NVMe with an inbox driver for quite some time.
Can you pronounce Stored at the top left for me?
Donnard. So that's a good point. Thank you for raising that. So all the projects that I start at PMC are named after mountains in my home country of Ireland. So Slieve Donnard, Slieve is like the Gaelic word for mountain. Slieve Donnard is a mountain just south of where I was born in Belfast. So, I'm in CSTO, so I want to be able to collaborate with other people. This project is pretty much all open source. I have blogs and white papers that tell you this is the hardware we use. You can go order that or something that you think will be compatible with that or something completely different if that's what you want to work on. We have GitHubs that have forks of the Linux kernel. We have branches off that for some of our different work. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. We have user space libraries that me and my team have put together that tie some of this together and do things like performance benchmarking. And all of that is open source. It's licensed under GPL where necessary because of the kernel. Linux kernel is GPL, so you have to keep that. But anywhere else it's licensed. User space code is Apache licensed, so you can pretty much do whatever the heck you like with it. We don't really care. And the idea is that we build this as a sandbox for people to play with. And I know for a fact that some people in this room have created or some semblance of this and done some work with us on that. The one thing that I haven't got in this diagram that I should probably put in that is optional, but I'll talk about why I think it should be a little more mandatory than just optional, is a PCIe switch. Now, obviously, with Intel giving us a billion PCIe lanes, we might not need a PCIe switch because we can just connect everything up to the CPU. And I'll talk a little about the pros and cons of that in a little later. So what are some of the goals and objectives of what we're trying to do here? A lot of what got me started on Project Donner was thinking about, you know, we build an NVMe SSD controller that, when you configure it correctly, can do a million IOPS. Now, if you configure it incorrectly, it will do -7 IOPS. But it's pretty easy to get it wrong. But, you know, there's products that are in the market today, HDSTOCZ, they're doing between 750,000 4K to 1,000,000 4K random IO. So we don't do the low-end stuff. And in fact, some people might claim our stuff is a little too high up, but you know, that's debatable. You can argue over that. You know, companies like Mellanox and Chelsea, I see Ellen here and I see Adan over there. You know, these guys are doing these awesome RDMA NICs that can do dual port 40 gig, 56 gig. We're now doing 25, 50, 100 gig. You know, if you convert that to IOPS, those are millions, literally millions of IOPS. So this guy can do 1,000,000 IOPS. This guy can do a couple of million, going even higher as we transition to 100 gig. If these poor guys are trying to do some hyper-converged, let's process some of this data, it's literally drinking from a fire hose. Right. I mean, no processor in the planet is going to be able to do any significant amount of data manipulation on a data stream that's traveling that fast. Okay, so if you're trying to do image detection, if you're trying to do some kind of searching algorithms, the reality is that these guys are not the bottleneck. The bottleneck's over here. It's either processing on the core, it's either on the fabric itself, the PCIe subsystem, or it's going to be something to do with either the DRAM bandwidth or the volume of DRAM at your disposal. Right? Something in here is probably going to do it. So with Donard, I wanted to explore, you know, what happens when we repartition that working set. So let's say, for example, we introduce some element of computation here. And rather than having data flows that always have to go through the computational periphery here, maybe we can direct traffic directly from the networking device to processing on it, directly to storage, vice versa. Is there a framework that we can build that allows this to happen? This guy is still here. He's still running you pretty much still need an operating system somewhere. Somebody somewhere has to have some kind of, even just for error handling and things like that. But maybe this guy, I like to think of it more, is the conductor of the orchestra rather than someone playing the instrument. Right, so this guy is kind of managing flows, providing quality of service, criteria, metric, responding to things from the outside world. But a lot of the data, well, all the data path, preferably, is going what I call east-west on this diagram, it's north-south. And this slide is in the deck, so I'm going to kind of skip it. It's just the hardware platform. If somebody really cares, we can talk a little about that. I'm going to talk about a couple of the pieces that we use to build our puzzle, and it's also like a plug for the company.
Yes. BS slide, just so you know, memory is part of the equation.
What's that?
Memory? What is that? You gave that as part of the major
block. Oh, yeah. I mean, so on. Oh, my goodness, what am I doing? Sorry. You mean this one here?
Yeah,
so what this is trying to show is that maybe if all this is doing is management, I don't need a Xeon class, and I maybe don't need, you know, as much DRAM, right? Because maybe, so the problem with NVMe normally is you stage something in a DRAM buffer, right? So if I, using standard NVMe, if I wanted to pull an RDMA, in fact, Intel did a lovely kind of discussion on this just earlier today, but let's say I wanted to do an NVMe write to this drive from somewhere else using RDMA. Right now, what I'd have to do is RDMA in here, and then do that. So you're effectively being double buffering. But another path is to maybe try and go this way. And that's part of what we were looking at with some of this work. Good point. Which means you might not need as much DRAM or as much DRAM bandwidth. So I'll skip that. So we have this product. PMC is not in the business of making solid-state drives. We enable our customers to do that. But that being said, we do build card-level products. So we actually,
This started as something a customer asked us to do, and then we ended up turning it into a generally available product. So this under this heat sink is our NVMe controller. And this thing appears as an NVMe drive, but it's not backed by flash, it's backed by VRAM. So it's basically a very low capacity, incredibly low latency. You know, you think 3D Crosspoint is fast, well, VRAM's faster. Yeah, it just costs more. And it's got really, really good endurance because it's DRAM. Well, I can just write it. So, you know, this sounds crazy. Why would I use this? This is great for next generation all-flash array write caching. Because I can write this guy over and over and over and over and over again in a log structure. And as long as I have at least enough capacity to store all my writes that are in flight, I'm good. Right? I don't need terabytes. I need gigabytes. So this is not for everybody, but it is quite useful. The other thing that's really, really good about it is our controller presents to the operating system as a block NVMe device, but it has a second access methodology. We can expose memory as a PCIe bar, and we can MM that into user space, and then I can basically do cache line changes that change cache lines on the DRAM. So this, for us, is... Even if I told my CEO, I don't care if we sell one of these, because I am learning so much about what next generation SSDs are going to look like from this, because I have cache line accessibility. I have a memory semantic way of talking to this. I still have my NVMe if I want it, which I do still want, because I want DMA engines. Right? And I get all of that on a PCIe interface. So this is part of, you know, you don't have to use this in Donner. You can use anything you like, but this was very useful for me, because it exposes both a cache line or memory semantic access methodology and also a block-based methodology. And there's not really a lot of devices out there right now that do both block and memory access semantics like that. So very useful for research. And like I said, we are actually selling some of them. We sell 7.
I understand you access the same memory, or the same cells, both by the block interface and the memory interface.
So, you can set it up either that way or...
Slap the bar over the whole device.
Yeah, you could make the bar bigger than you have space for, as long as you have some way of handling page faults.
So it has a PMEM device-style behavior as well.
We know exactly what... So everything that you see, everything that you've done in PMEM, on an NVDIMM, we've done on NVDIMMs and this.
Right.
And in fact,
the IO bus instead of the memory bus.
Exactly. And so a lot of the work that, you know, Intel and you guys and the SNEAG work, all the NVDIMM work that's happened, it has been fantastic, because it's really helped us understand this as a concept as well. So it's a good point. I mean, this is basically an NVDIMM on the PCIe bus. When I expose it as a memory device, it's just like having an NVDIMM.
Well, until you try to read.
What's that?
Read.
Well, sorry. So let's ignore performance. I'm talking about as an entity in the system. Okay. Yeah. There's always performance issues.
Well, but writing performance will be pretty good. Yeah. But read performance will be remarkably low.
Yeah. But then we have DMA engines, right, which are very, very fast.
Sure. But the block interface is probably a better way to read this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very good point that you've got. Yeah. Just the gentleman in the back, and then Terry, I'll get to you. Yeah, no, sorry, you were there. Yeah.
How low is the low latency?
So I got some slides on that. So if you want to read a cache line of DRAM on this thing, if we just assume we're up in user space, and we've memmapped this in, and we do a read, that read gets serviced in about, around between 600 and 800 microseconds. But it's architecture dependent, right? So that's the kind of number you get. No, did I say microseconds? I meant nanoseconds.
Did I say microseconds?
I meant nano. Sorry, holy crap. Yeah, this is called a hard drive. So basically, in that memory mode, what happens is the operating system goes, hey, I want to read this cache line on this memap file. I'm talking Linux, and I will talk Linux semantics all the way through, because that's the one I understand. Apologies to anybody who works for another operating system. But so if I try to read that MAP, what essentially happens is that falls through the driver stack. It turns into a TCP/IP, a PCIe TLP, or memory basically. It comes down, works out, the memory request is not for DRAM. I'm actually going out through an IO, maybe through an IO MMU, out onto the PCIe subsystem, enumerating my buses, I'm going out to this device. Basically, that memory read PCIe TLP hits this guy, hits our controller, we service that TLP, we pass that back as a completion. That goes back through the stack and then into the OS. There you go.
So then why do you need both interfaces? Why not always do that?
Because load store semantics take up CPU cycles. The reason we have DMA engines is because I can have a thread that goes, I want to read a megabyte of data, and I don't want to sit here waiting. I'm going to switch to a different thread, and you DMA engine, you're going to service that, put the data in the buffer, and you're going to raise an interrupt when you're done. And so basically you switch threads, you go and do something that's going to earn you some money, hopefully, right? And then at some point in the future, the MSIX interrupt trigger interrupts the operating system and says, hey, that thread sent that interrupt, it's time to go back and do your work because your data's not in there, right? I have some data a little later that looks at what happens when we raise an interrupt in an operating system, and this is, I hear some people laughing. This is data that I had to go measure, and I couldn't believe nobody had put this online. It's really very interesting. It's not so interesting when you're reading a hard drive where the access times are so long that it could literally be a newspaper. But as we move to octane-based drives, like Intel ones at IDF, the time taken for the drivers to do its work and the time taken for the hardware to do an MSIX interrupt. Jim showed some, the VD access time is really absolutely nothing. Right? Everything else is taking up the bulk of the latency. And I think that's a problem we need to go think about. Right? As we, either we move to the memory channel in entirety and we give up on super fast SSDs, or we go, I see. Yeah, exactly. I think I have an answer. So, this is, go ahead.
I just want to follow up on that. So, 6 to 800 nanoseconds for a read of a cache line.
Mm-hmm.
And when I want to flush that, when I push that cache line back out.
Well, remember, this is inside, this is a PCIe cache line. This is not mapped into your normal memory space. So, it's not necessarily cache backed by your L2, L3, or whatever cache, right? And that's architecture dependent. And you're starting to get into some of the finer details of what happens in your memory subsystem on the given processor that you're working on. And we can start talking Intel specific, but I gotta wonder when we hit NDA problems and stuff like that. But you're right, Terry, there are things you need to think about. Very similar to some of the NVDIMM stuff. Is it in a cache? If I write it, can I guarantee it's got to this device and it's not stuck in some stupid cache which somebody put there to make performance better, but now it's hurting me because I'm trying to go to persistence. Very, very, very similar problems to what SNE is working on with the NVDIMM, for sure. But slightly different because we're on the IO.
Mind you, SNE isn't solving those problems. It's just waving red flags.
Somebody solved these problems. Yeah. That's fair enough. Okay. So, really, really interesting device, and like I said, if anyone wants one, well, if you're a customer of ours, I'm sure we'll get you a loaner, but if you want to buy one, I'm sure we can sell you one, for sure. Very interesting device. The other piece of the puzzle, and this is the block I didn't have in my architecture diagram, but, we have a PCIe switch product. I'm not going to go into it in a lot of detail, but it basically allows you to connect up some of the things some of the devices, it's common knowledge. GPU Direct. I don't know if anyone has worked with GPU Direct or heard of it, but it's worth looking up. I mean, basically everything I'm doing here, I didn't invent. I basically stole it from GPU Direct, which is RDMA into the memory, the IO memory on the graphics card, and they use it in HPC all the time. But when they first started doing that, they realized if I have my graphic card and my NIC connected directly to the x86, and I try to do direct traffic between the two, something in the I/O memory controller in the Intel architecture screws up east-west traffic. Surprise, surprise. The optimal performance path is to go from the I/O device up into the memory subsystem, and then down from the memory subsystem, because that's probably the path that they cared the most about. I apologize if anyone from Intel. But But the problem is that if I want to start doing east-west traffic, as I call it, I do hit performance issues as I try to move large memory PCIe transactions east-west through that subsystem. So that is going to change as we go. And you know, I have no control over that. Right? Some of the people in the room probably have more influence on Intel. Go tell them about it. Go see if they're going to do anything about it. Like,
it's to slap a PCI switch in front of it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So the switch, So Terry, who works for Emerson, but also is a member of our sales team, for Microsoft, who is also part of our sales team, would like to put out that east-west problem goes away if you put a switch here. So if you had the CPU from whatever vendor you're here, and I only know that the east-west is a bad treated Intel root complex. I hope to do this work on an open power server very soon and compare. And I haven't tested on an ARM, but I can't comment on their east-west, but I do on the Intel, certainly on the current architecture.
What the latency of this?
This switch from one point to another is about 160 microseconds. Nanoseconds. I get my measure. 160 nanoseconds. So it's not zero, but it's not huge either. Right? Yeah. And obviously that's per hop. So if you put a lot of those in, it's going to cost you more. That's just part of the thing. So that's another piece of the puzzle, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So the great thing about having the switch is that the east-west traffic goes there. I'm not going to hang around too long on this slide. GitHub, Donard. Not too many things are called Donard in the world. You'll get a picture of a mountain in Ireland, and you'll probably get this GitHub site. So we have user space code. We have a fork of the kernel. Right now, I think we're rebased off 3.19. There's actually all the great NVDIMM work that's gone in. We need to rebase off 4.3 or 4.2 RC2 or something, because a lot of the new patches from the Intel folk and other NVDIMM people are actually going to be quite useful for this. So it's quite an exciting time for some of this work. So some actual results. We started off by doing some experiments, and these are quite old experiments. With GPUs, and these were Kepler class NVIDIA cards. Really, really, these don't have any kind of graphic port on the back. They're not for that. These are GPUs. These are designed to crunch numbers. And then we have an NVMe SSD. This is one of our eval cards, so that's why it looks like a complete piece of crap. It's not a thing, right? This is an NVMe device, and that's what I had when I did this testing. So what we were trying to do is, let's just go directly from the storage device to the memory on a GPU. And NVIDIA have a driver. Now, NVIDIA are well known for being a-holes, for want of a better word, in the Linux community, because their driver's somewhat proprietary and in binary form, and binary is pretty much anathema to the Linux community. But they have to expose the symbols for the functions in their driver, because otherwise how do you know how to call their where their functions live in memory space? We know what those functions do, so you can actually tie in to the functions that they're providing. So basically we rode on the coattails of GPU Direct, and we basically invented something that I called NVMe Direct, except I knew that Amber would hit me, so I changed it to Donner. And we basically are able to say, the operating system can say, hey, I have a file on a file system, or I have a region of LBAs on this device. Mr. DMA engine on this NVMe SSD, can you please send it to these cache line addresses or these bus addresses? And this guy will go, yes, I certainly will do that. And it starts pumping out data. The PCIe system realizes that the destination for those TLPs is actually in memory that's exposed by this guy. And so the data comes directly through here. If they're both connected directly to the CPU, they'll have to go up, hit the CPU, go through the I/O subsystem, and then out. If you have a PCIe switch in there, it has the enumeration tables. It just routes the traffic directly from one device to the other. Okay. When we did that, we measured two different things. This is classical, and this is the Donard method. we measured just raw bandwidth. How quickly can I do this? And then we also measured how much DRAM am I consuming on the central processor. Right? Because in the original approach, you're actually double buffering. Because in normal NVMe, you would have to pull the data off the drive, put it in a DRAM buffer, and push that DRAM buffer down to the graphics card. In the new version, you don't need that. So this one is just raw throughput. This one is how much DRAM volume am I saving. So it's kind of a figure of merit in that regard. So both figures of merits got better. I'll be honest, I did these experiments before we actually had a PCIe switch at PMC. We only just got that chip back from fab a couple of months ago, and this work was done probably almost a year ago now. I need to go back and redo these now that I have a switch, because I think I can make this number even better. Okay.
Why do you need any DRAM at all in the Dunner case?
In this particular case?
Yeah, I mean, what's it doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, in this particular case, I don't need any DRAM except somebody's running an operating system.
Yeah, OS orchestrated guys to talk to each
other. Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't even know what's happening.
No, he doesn't even know what's happening.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, he initiated. He said, please move this from here to here.
Well, right.
Yeah. But I have some cases later that are RDMA-based where he doesn't even know what's happening.
Right.
In normal.
The remote.
Yeah.
So today, GPU doesn't know how to run NVMe drivers. This is why the CPU has to be involved here.
Yeah.
Because theoretically, you could tell the GPU, please.
Well, yeah, on a hardware level, you could get rid of everything and just say, but that, Yeah, and I know NVMe over Fabrics is kind of going down that path, but yeah, in theory, these guys could do this by just not even having a central processing unit at all. Okay. Not at all.
Just a PCI rack.
It's just a PCI rack at that point, right? And this guy is a DMA. I mean, basically the rule is if one of them's a DMA master and the other one's a slave, things are going to work. If you've got two slaves, they can't do anything very interesting. If you've got two masters, they can't do anything interesting because they don't have a destination to go to. You can't DMA into another DMA's mailbox. You want an exposed bar. Right? Yes?
Is that a constant queue depth? Large IO?
This was large. This was what? How do I get the biggest number here? So this looks good. So this was pretty big queue depth, pretty big IO. Yeah. I don't have a latency number here, but we can go back and measure it. Yeah, and I gotta tell you, some of these results are definitely, I would like to redo a lot of this. Now I have a switch. I want to measure latency. I want to measure how busy is the CPU working from a perf point of view when I'm doing it this way versus that way. And to be honest, I can't do everything I want to do. And I'm hoping some people in the room will find it interesting enough to come and ride on this roller coaster. So, pretty interesting. For this particular, and all the code to generate these numbers is all available in the open source repository, so people can certainly try and recreate them and help with that. So, for that GPU example, we actually decided to write something that's a little more interesting. This is for a demo that we were doing for somebody. So, we did a needle in the haystack. So, what we did is we went to, I think it's MIT, they have this big image database that's used by academics for certain image recognition. And what we did is needle in a haystack problem. We took the PMC logo and we randomly.
Where's Waldo?
it's where's Wally? Yeah, exactly. So we basically, took this PMC logo and we basically buried it in these images, a small set of the huge database. And then we basically put that entire database on the NVMe device and we wrote some code using CUDA to go do convolution on the image with our hit needle, which is our logo, and go, please, out of these 10,000 images, find the N that have this logo in it. And basically, that's what we did. We did some comparisons between how many pixels per second can I do when I'm just using a CPU. We did it using CUDA, but without the Donner methodology of DMAing directly. And then we also did it with the Donner, and we compared a hard drive, a solid state drive, obviously the NVMe drive, and we got a pretty good speed up with the SSD. Obviously, we can't do daughter with the HDD because it's not an NVMe compliant HDD on the market. I think some of it might be working. Anyway, but nothing that we did in this slide is non-NVMe, right? So it's just an this should work with any NVMe 1.1 compliant drive. The performance numbers will change, obviously, right, depending on the drive, but that's what we got. And then we also did some analysis to work out where's the bottleneck. So interestingly, the bottleneck was different in each of the three places. For the case where the CPU was doing the image convolution, it was processor cycles that became the bottleneck. Right? It just, even with multiple threads, it just takes time to go through all those images and say, does this convolution of these two generate some kind of impulse? So I think this is in my thing. With the CUDA version, because we were now pushing the inner core of that image recognition onto the graphics card, the problem actually became DRAM bandwidth is the problem, because we're moving data all the way in DRAM and all the way out, so it's basically an in and out double buffer. And then with the Donner, we were actually able to make it what we want to be the limiting factor to the graphics card. So we were able to repartition the problem and push the bottleneck to where I think I wanted it to be, which is on the graphics card, because I can always deploy more graphic cards. I could have one SSD and two Teslas or whatever kind of ratio. And I am going to run way over if I keep going into space, so I'm going to jump. We did some demonstration work. We did some work with Chelsea. We're all here. Thank you for that. And we did some work where now, we did some work with Mellanox as well. So we're definitely looking more at RDMA. But these results are now looking at RDMA and NVMe. And this is a very interesting area as well. This was a problem that we wanted to solve. My background is kind of enterprise storage, and write commit log or write commits are really, really important. And we talked about that as well in the end. If I'm a remote client and I want to write some data, I can't let go of that data until the write has been acknowledged, right? Because I don't know if I'm going to get the ACK back till I get it. So the speed, the response time for an acknowledgement on a write is normally a pretty interesting thing to know in the storage system. And it doesn't matter whether it's direct attached storage or network storage or some other kind of storage. Typically, you're interested in how quickly can I get my write to persistence and get an acknowledgement back to whoever initiated the write. Okay, pretty, pretty important stuff. Now, in an RDMA meets NVMe kind of world, a standard write path for a write would be this blue line. So the write would come in through the RDMA connection. You would have an MR, an RDMA memory region, declared somewhere in DRAM, and the data would end up there. You would basically notify this processor that there's new data, or it would be polling, right? And it would basically then do an NVMe command to move data from that buffer out to the NVMe device. Okay. So once that write is acknowledged back to the driver, it then has to generate an acknowledgement over the RDMA network back to the initiator. Okay. That's your delay path. So network delay, DRAM delay, context switch due to interrupt generated by SSD, service interrupt due to the fly. So lots of steps there. So what we were doing in this work is looking at can I actually just push directly into some kind of persistence zone here? Now, this is a DMA master. This is an RDMA NIC. Okay. Typically, RDMA NICs can only be masters. I'm sure these guys are correct. But typically, they're masters. This guy, in normal NVMe mode, is a master. I already said two masters can't talk. Right? But our NVRAM card can be a master and a slave. Slave is DMI mode, or the direct memory interface. So we actually basically used our card as a proxy for a next generation NVMe SSD that is capable of exposing some memory type semantics on it. So we're now getting into the world of non-standard or NVMe as it doesn't exist today, but maybe NVMe as it might exist sometime in the not too distant future. We did some comparisons on what was my bandwidth? I don't have latency numbers here. I really should have latency numbers here. Sorry, I apologize for that. It's pretty important, but I don't have them right here.
and we can certainly work to get those numbers for anyone who's interested. And then we also looked at the DRAM utilization. And what we did there is there's a program, I think it's called MPR or MBR. So what that MBR does is it runs a background process on available threads, and it basically hammers DRAM, and then it basically sees how quickly it can get to DRAM. So back to something again we talked about in one of the talks earlier. If I'm using my DRAM bandwidth to do all this blue path, how much do I have left over for processes and threads that might be trying to make me some money? Because I'm not making money moving data. I'm making money telling Terry what kind of car he wants to buy next week, or, you know, what kind of advert to put in front of Stephen as he's having his dinner. So moving data is important, but we don't directly make money by moving data. And now we start to get into, you know, the interesting world of NVMe over Fabrics, NVMe over RDMA. So we did some work with our friends at Mellanox, and this work is from demonstrations that we did at Flash Memory Summit, and there's lots of blog information on that. But we did an example, a prototype of NVMe over RDMA, or NVMe over Fabrics. So what we did is we have a server here. This server actually had a PCIe switch. We got our PCIe switch back from TSMC 2.5 weeks before Flash Memory Summit. And I went to my guys and went, I'm buying everybody in that team a beer if I can have it in the demo. And they were like, 2.5 weeks.
One beer they worked
on. They thought it was one beer each. So we had the awesomeness of having a PCIe switch here, and that's not so relevant for this slide, but the next slide is very relevant. And what we did is we took the standard inbox NVMe driver, and one of our guys basically forked it. He wrote a client version, and he wrote a server version. So now the client version, you could do one module and then use mod params or sys or whatever to do it that way, but we just split it in two. The client driver is here on the client. Client device has no direct attached storage. It doesn't have an SSD. But what happens is we expose a virtual device, /dev/NVMe0M1. As far as this guy's operating system is concerned, he has a direct attached NVMe SSD connected to him. He can do admin commands, he can do command line interface, he can do FIO. It's just a block device. Okay? The performance, obviously, is going to be a little different because he doesn't really have real hardware there. When he issues, for example, an NVMe read, what happens is it goes into the NVMe driver. We intercept that. We go, hang on, this is NVMe over RDMA. I'm going to take this I/O. I'm going to pass it over to the RDMA part of the kernel. It gets RDMA encapsulated by the RDMA NIC. We've already established a connection beforehand, so assume that bit's already been taken care of. This guy basically handles RDMA over to a buffer that we've already set up in the memory region here in DRAM. This slide has DRAM, so just bear with me. At that point, the driver on this side kicks in. We have a polling operation on a completion queue in the driver on this side. It goes, I got new data. He takes that data. He works out it's an NVMe read command. He basically passes that command to essentially the standard NVMe driver. That performs the operation on the NVMe drive. Data comes back. And I just respond over RDMA. We did this we basically were seeing about 6 microseconds of additional latency through the RDMA stack. So if I do a read on the direct attached drive, I got 40, 50 microseconds. It's a NAND-based SSD with an Optane drive. I think Intel are publicly quoting something around 10 in their IDF demo. But we're adding about 6 microseconds. I think NVMe over Fabrics is targeting under 10 as a good place to be. And obviously the individual vendors, of which there are several in this room who are active in the space, will obviously compete with each other to try to get those numbers to where they think makes sense for the market.
Well, if you have Ethernet, it's going to take you 4 months just to go back and forth. So, pretty well.
Yeah, you know? No, so we did this, this was Rocky V2, so we're running a VGNet. We did direct attach, so we didn't actually have a switch hop here. Switches, they have latency too, right? But, you know, this gives you a ballpark of where we are. We actually also ran it, the Mellanox mix we had also ran in InfiniBand, so we also ran it in IV mode. We didn't see a big difference between the two, but we didn't have any switches in there. You know, that's going to, you know, like I said, that'll change going forward. I'm going to skip this for the sake of time, kind of get to the rub. So this is basically the kind of the interesting modification that we made when we realized that our NVMe drive can be both a DMA master and slave. And here we have some interesting repercussions for latency, for access semantics across a network tied into, again, the NVDIMM work. But in this case, what we did is we basically said, rather than having to kind of go all the way through DRAM, is there a way that we can do it so we can go directly into this device? And because this device is, like I said, both a block-based device and a memory access mode, we were able to do that. And so in this particular example, we weren't doing NVMe anymore, certainly not standard NVMe, but we were basically accessing persistent memory on an I/O memory device behind the PCIe switch using RDMA. So this guy doesn't need to be, this guy ain't doing jack. Well, he's initiating the connection, he's gonna manage any error events, he's gonna run an OS, but because it's RDMA, he doesn't even get notified of anything in this particular scenario. I can come in and I can make cache line modifications on this PCIe card. The traffic is all behind this switch, and it's all happening from this client control. Right? Now, we get into some interesting things like, if I'm doing cache line writes, atomicity becomes a problem. If I want to do a 4K write, but I want to have the rule that a 4K write either happens in its entirety or not at all, pretty standard feature of a block I/O, right? But something crashes halfway through the transaction, I don't have atomicity. This device could provide that. We could provide that as a service by doing some kind of double buffering and going, I'll take your data, I'm not going to commit it to the memory until I've got it all, and then I'm going to commit it. At which point it looks a little like a block device, because that's what block devices do. But it is interesting for a couple of reasons. You know, one is that we're basically, you know, completely isolating ourselves from this part of the system. And another is that we're basically allowing this guy to continue to do whatever it is that makes us the money that we want him to make. Like, whereas this guy is just really moving data. We've almost split the system into the money-making part and the person doing the heavy lifting. So some interesting, I think there's some interesting ideas there. And that's something that we're working through with...
What was your end-to-end latency?
What's that?
End-to-end latency.
It's about this, you know, if you want an acknowledgement, it's about the same as before, so like 5 to 6 additional microseconds. Five microseconds to do this. Because remember, we're a write-back cache, and we're a region of guaranteed persistence, because we have a capacitor system. So all we have to do is get the data in us. We don't have to put it in the non-volatile memory. As soon as we've got that TLP, the onus is on us as this device manufacturer to make a quality of service statement that we will guarantee that data is safe. Right? That's what a power fail storage device does. So we can make that kind of, so we don't need to commit to memory, so we can acknowledge the write very quickly. So we were seeing, you know, the 5 to 6 microsecond round trip. But we're now able to do small I/O, we can do 64 bytes, we can do 128 bytes, you know, we can do much smaller modifications. And I think, you know, with DRAM, it's somewhat interesting, but it's pretty expensive. With 3D crosspoint or resistive RAM or whatever other wonderful memory technologies that are coming, I think, you know, the cost point of this per gigabit will come down, and the performance won't necessarily get any worse, because I don't think the memory access times are particularly the problem here, given that we already have microseconds of network time associated. So, yeah. I don't I see a lot of interesting things I can do with this. I think there's people in the room who can probably pretty quickly think up things that I have not even thought about yet.
So these describe write only or also read only?
So the, I mean, the reads would be very similar to the writes in the sense that, you know.
And then the master would be the name of the.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, in all these diagrams, yes. Yeah, I mean, in all of these, the last two slides, this Nick is always a master. He's always a master in these slides. In the graphic card slides, the graphics card was the slave. And in this mode, we're the slave. Actually, in the previous slide I showed me, the NVMe over Fabrics one, they were both masters, and we were using the DRAM off the processor. Oh, excuse me. So in this example, he's a master, he's a slave. He's a master, he's a slave. But we're having to double buffer, basically. So where are we going? You know, this is one idea of where you go with this. You know, we go to one of our friendly RDMA vendors. We put an RDMA NIC here. Maybe we put our NVRAM cards I showed you earlier here, the DMA masters and DMA slaves. Maybe we put some NVMe SSDs here. Maybe some of these are NAND-based. Maybe some of them are not NAND-based, which makes them AND-based. We've got a PCIe switch here because we want to have good east-west traffic flow. Maybe because we have to keep the legacy side of PMC happy, we have an HDA so we can go out to a bunch of rusty disks. I put it in there. And maybe we have this guy, but at this point, what's this guy really doing? Maybe this guy can be here. Maybe he can be here. Maybe he could be in here. Maybe he could be here. He's not doing a lot of heavy lifting, so maybe he doesn't have to be the biggest processor in the world. We can use this NVRAM as essentially a shared pool of persistence for write caching, and then later on move the data using the DMA engines and these guys out to the storage. So I can acknowledge writes quickly. Maybe I can provide quality of service by taking these drives, some of which are ARM-based, some of which are NAND-based, and you know, divisioning that up as a pool and providing quality of service metrics. You want to pay for it, you get the Optane. You don't want to pay for it, you get the 3D TLC. So we can do all kinds of things there. You know, we're using peer direct is maybe not a word I've used in the presentation before. Again, borrowing off the shoulders of giants, peer direct is a Mellanox-based patch set in the Linux kernel that enables this east-west flow. It's part of what makes GPU direct work, it's part of what makes Donner work. And that's, Mellanox have that publicly available. It's not upstream, so you've got to pull it in to your kernel and recompile. But you're all smart people, I'm sure you know how to do that. So I've probably run way over. Most of you are still here, so hopefully you're still interested. Where do I think? We're out of time. That's all right. So officially we're out of time. I'm going to keep talking unless they have to kick me out. Yeah. Where do I think we want this to go? I think NVMe SSDs would be very interesting if we have a standard way of exposing some kind of memory access into them. So taking what we do in a proprietary fashion with our NVRAM product, but integrate that into the NVMe Express standard. There's actually already something that kind of does that. It's called controller memory buffers. It's not quite where I think it needs to be, but I think with the right people in the right rooms, we can take it from where it is today to where I think it needs to go. All these themes are tying into why I think that's the case. We have RDMA and NVMe over Fabrics. They need a DMA slave as a destination. Why can't that be on the drive itself? We've got NVMe 1.2. It's already a starting point. We can go from there. We've got next-gen NVM that doesn't need to have erasures. It's bi-addressable or somewhat bi-addressable. It's faster. It looks more like memory. So having a memory semantic way of accessing it makes a lot of sense. Even if it's not on the DDR interface, it still makes sense because I can MM that, I can give my applications, I can take advantage of all the NVDIMM work that SNIA and others have been doing, and we can leverage that. But also have a block device access methodology as well. Maybe they overlap, maybe they don't overlap. I don't know for sure. Thinking about non-volatile memory is memory rather than storage. Do I need to have MSIX interrupts? Do I need to have that connectivity? Do I need to have some of the other services? Maybe there's ways I can solve those problems in my applications or in my operating system so that I can take better advantage of every dollar I invest in non-volatile memory. PCIe switches allow east-west traffic flow, get the CPU up to a higher level where it can make me my money. But I can only take advantage of that if I have a memory region on the PCIe interface. I need to have somewhere to put the data. So I have some more slides, but we've gone way over. That's really my call to arms. Very happy, as always, to talk about this. As you can tell, I'm pretty passionate about it. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'm out of time, and I'm going to go for a drink. You guys
can come and join. Thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snea.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit storagedeveloper.org.